This is such a simple, sweet kind of story, and it turns out to be so historically significant. I absolutely love it. This guy from Astoria set out to do something nice for his wife, and what did he end up doing? Inventing cable TV. I'm going to tell you all about it in just a second here, but first let me introduce myself. My name is Finn J.D. John, and I write a new... My name is Finn J.D. John, and I write a weekly newspaper column called Offbeat Oregon History that runs in about a dozen community newspapers around the state. Offbeat... Stupid sump pump. I started writing the column in 2008, and currently... I started writing the column in 2008, one a week. Currently, there's about 175 columns in the archive kitty. This column tells the stories of Oregon history that nobody knows about or that everybody's forgotten. Stories of heroes and rascals, of shipwrecks and lost gold, of Shanghaied sailors and Skid Row bordellos and pirates and robbers and buried treasure and unsolved mysteries. What you're listening to now is an archive feed that brings an archive column to you every single morning in your choice of text and pictures or audio-only formats. Today's episode ran in the newspapers on September 19th, 2011, and I'm going to read it to you now. Every term in the history of telecom class I teach at Oregon State University, I always ask for a show of hands from students. How many of you guys get your TV from an antenna, I ask? Not a satellite dish, an antenna, rabbit ears, or a big thing on the roof. Oh, there goes the sumpy pumpy again. I usually see two or three hands out of a class of 70 students. The fact is, broadcast TV is a ghost of its former self. Cable TV is how almost everyone gets his or her television these days. Cable TV, CATV, which stands for Community Antenna Television, is a huge industry today. And it all started, believe it or not, with a guy on a rooftop in Astoria, Oregon, pursuing the sweet and simple goal of doing something nice for his wife. Here's how it happened. In the summer of 1946, Ed Parsons, the owner of radio station AAST Astoria, which still exists, by the way, went to the National Association of Broadcasters convention in Chicago with his wife, Grace. Grace, like millions of Americans, was enchanted by the demonstrations of television. But also like millions of Americans, Grace Parsons lived in a small city. There were only a handful of TV stations across the country, and they were all in big metropolitan areas. And the FCC had put a moratorium on new TV station licenses while they worked out some technical issues. It looked like Mrs. Parsons would have to wait years and years before she'd get her TV in Astoria. It looked like Mrs. Parsons would have to wait years and years before she'd get her TV. But Mrs. Parsons, unlike those other millions of Americans, was married to somebody who had the technical know-how to do something about it. And a year or two later, Grace Parsons was watching her TV, and the world would never be the same. What Parsons figured out was that if he could bring in a really feeble signal from a faraway TV station, he might be able to pick it up, massage it, strengthen it, and serve it up locally to televisions that would otherwise be far out of range. You see, unlike radio transmissions, AM especially, TV signals don't bounce off the atmosphere, bounce off the ionosphere, rather. They're a line of sight. So Parsons had to find a signal that was line of sight from some... So Parsons had to find a signal that was line of sight from some place and pick it up. When KRSC-TV, which has since been renamed KING, started broadcasting in Salem in late
Nate, stop it!
When KRSC-TV, which has since been renamed KING, started broadcasting in... God, I can't win for losing. When KRSC-TV, which has since been renamed KING, started broadcasting in Seattle in late 1948, Parsons saw his opportunity to try this out, and in the process, to give his wife the TV she wanted. All he had to do was figure out a place in which signals from Seattle reached Astoria. Parsons started building equipment and running experiments. He scouted all over the Astoria area. He started, of course, with the mountaintops and high places. There, he got nothing. Moving lower and looking around, he started picking up signals in odd places. The sides of hills, a small collection of blocks downtown, random places like that. Eventually, he figured out that the signals came in like fingers, just a block or two wide and just a few hundred feet high. The trick was to find one of these fingers that just happened to land on a place that was practical for an antenna. Everyone he found was in some inconvenient place where experimentation would be impossible. Then he discovered that one finger pointed directly at a place he'd never thought to look. His apartment, located a few blocks away from the John Jacob Astor Hotel in downtown Astoria. After that, the experimentation kicked into high gear. While Grace monitored the signal in the couple's living room, Ed fiddled with equipment on the roof of the neighboring Astor Hotel. They talked back and forth on handheld radios. Finally, the picture came in. It's not clear how long it took them to realize their success had generated a new and unexpected problem. Suddenly, Ed and Grace were the most popular couple in town. Dozens and dozens of friends packed into their home every time KRSC was on the air. Literally, we had no home, Parsons told the Portland Oregonian. Finally, on Christmas Eve, Parsons kicked everybody out of the house and resolved to figure out how to solve this new problem. Ed had built signal-boosting devices to bring the weak signal from Seattle in clear enough to see. It was simple enough for him to make a bigger signal-boosting device and split the signal onto coax lines leading to several other TV sets. Thus was born the first CATV network on the West Coast, possibly the first in the nation. Ironically, Parsons didn't initially plan to use cables at all. His initial plan, after receiving the signals from Seattle, was to rebroadcast them on an unused...
Nate, stop it, please!
UHF television frequency. You know, the frequencies on the little knob on the old TV sets, numbered 14 through 83. If he'd done this, it's hard to say what would have happened to his plan. It might have gone no further than experimentation. After all, you can't charge people to receive UHF signals, and you can't sell ads on someone else's rebroadcast program. Without a means of collecting revenue to cover his expenses, Parsons would probably have had to abandon the whole thing. So it was probably lucky that the Federal Communications Commission was taking a fairly dim view of the whole concept, pretty much from the start. And when Parsons came to them with hat in hand asking for permission to use a UHF channel, he was turned down flat. Parsons' only alternative, then, was to send the signal out on coax cables strung from house to house. Ironically, the Federal Communications Commission's response to Parsons' project had a huge impact on its future influence over television broadcasting. This is why you can watch explicit sex scenes and learn new curse words on HBO and Showtime. They're never broadcast over the air, so the FCC lacks jurisdiction to tell the producers what they may show. Now, the FCC did try to assert regulatory authority over cable distribution at one point, but courts threw this idea out, noting that all CATV did was enable more than one person to share an antenna. It was really no different than having a second TV set in the kitchen hooked up to the same antenna as the one in the living room. It must be noted that CATV was an idea whose time had come. There was tremendous demand for TV signals, and many people were racking their brains trying to figure out how to bring them in. We know that at least one other inventor came up with the same idea at roughly the same time out in Mahoney City, Pennsylvania. We don't actually know for sure who did it first because the other inventor had a catastrophic fire. All the records are gone. But we do know that when Ed Parsons put that tower up on top of that hotel, he was leading a movement that would utterly transform the world. But we do know that when Ed Parsons put that tower on top of that hotel, he was leading a movement that would utterly transform the world. It happened right here in River City. That's it for today. You can check out all the columns and subscribe to either RSS feed by going to www.offbeatoregon.com. Both of the feeds are optimized for smartphone use, but they work great on a netbook or a tablet or even an old-fashioned computer. Everything here is covered under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license, for what that's worth. And hey, thanks for listening. Drop me a line anytime at finn@offbeatoregon.com, or if you do Twitter, @offbeatoregon, especially if you're going to be in the Corvallis area and have time for a cup of coffee. I'll be back tomorrow around 6 a.m. with the next episode, and until then, well, happy trails.